want to start the topic of today, which is how we reach for a place of choice inside ourselves, independent of what comes towards us, recognizing the inner choice that we have in every moment, in every circumstance. I'd like to start by asking if anybody did any of the prep work and has something that you would like us to explore and touch upon.
My son, after my ex and I were divorced, called and wanted me to attend his second child's baptism at the same time as my ex and his new wife were going to be there. It was a very sad divorce from my point of view. I said that I would be glad to come and be there at the same time as my ex for the actual celebration, but that since I have to fly, I asked that there be several days either before or after the celebration that I'd be allowed to visit by myself without my ex there. And my son said no, they did not want to have that happen. So I felt I needed to make a choice. But there was consequences for me when I refused to be there for the whole time when my ex was there. Does that fit what you're looking for?
I think so, in the sense that his request of you was to come at the same time that your ex was there.
Correct.
And you heard that as a demand.
Very much so.
Let's try to work with that a little bit.
I journaled somewhat with it, but I found myself getting a little overwhelmed. Still triggers me.
What part
triggers me? The consequences that have unfolded for me since I made that choice not to attend. I did not attend, and I have not been invited to many things since then. Had very little contact with my son, my daughter-in-law, and my grandchildren.
So what it sounds like to me is that you chose to say no to the demand.
Correct.
But I actually have a sense, based on what you're saying, that you made the choice from a place of connection with your needs and a willingness to risk the consequences, not from a place of submission or rebellion.
I believe so. This has gone on for quite some years now, and somewhere inside of myself, I just knew that I could not submit to what I had submitted to pretty much my whole marriage. It was more on an intuitive level than anything. And so now I'm going back over it and actually trying to define it in terms of NBC.
Yeah. Still, I'm wondering if, as you look at the energy with which you said no,
mm-hmm.
was that an energy that had clear connection to the needs, or was it an energy of rebellion?
Perhaps at that time it was an energy of rebellion because I did not have the method of connecting to needs.
Yeah.
I knew I could no longer submit the way I had always submitted.
So it was more about asserting yourself
mm-hmm.
than about clear choice about whether this particular situation would work for you or not. It is just a no. That's the rebellion.
I think I did make a clear choice that this situation would not work for me. If I had it to do over again with the understanding that I have now, I would probably be able to negotiate more by having a conversation about his feelings and needs in the situation and my feelings and needs. I can't help but believe that there would have been a lot more ability there to talk in MBC terms.
There's a lot of mourning for you about what happened.
Yes, still is, because there's still not a lot of movement forward in my family situation. I don't know whether this is the kind of thing that you can work with in the present moment of what you're trying to accomplish.
I think this demonstrates is two things. One is that sometimes there are definitely consequences to our choices.
Yes.
And I want to tease out a couple of things from there. One is that one cannot make a demand without having the power to create consequences. So, for example, I can go to the president of a company that I don't like what they're doing, and I can say, I demand that you stop doing it. But I don't have the power to say, or else. So it cannot be a demand. In this particular case, your son has the power to not invite you.
Correct.
So he can't create consequences. So I wanted to say that making the choice is not about having no consequences. It's about overcoming the fear of consequences.
Yes, and as I look at the situation, and since I'm still struggling to hold my choice and my autonomy and my integrity, when I look down the list of needs, there's an incredible number of them that could not be met if I just submitted in this situation.
Yeah. My biggest thing is the hope that we can transcend the submit rebel paradigm.
Okay.
In other words, in that moment, the only way that you could exercise choice was through saying no.
Correct. With the tools that I had at that point in time.
And I have a sense that with all the pain and anguish that you still carry, that you have compassion towards yourself about having made that choice in the way that you did.
Oh, absolutely. In thinking about it, I would not change my choice, given what I had to work with at the time.
Yeah. And still, you can now look and see that there's actually more room in the situation than you imagined at the time.
Yes.
Because sometimes the choice is not between yes or no. Sometimes, if we can transcend the submit rebel, we see a different option. In this case, dialogue.
Yes, and I cannot help but believe that because I held on to myself, even though I didn't know what I was holding on to, I could not define what I was holding on to, I continued to search for a way of understanding it, which ultimately led me to MVC. And now there is a possibility of dialogue happening.
Yes.
I've continued to send birthday cards and Christmas cards, all that stuff. And he did call me after I sent him a birthday card and apologized to me for not talking to me recently. And that's the last contact I had from him. So anyway, there's a little door opening there. At the same time, I have more confidence because my skills are increasing, even though I still count myself as a very, very baby giraffe.
Yeah. But you are very awake to the possibility of creating connection and reclaiming the connection through dialogue based on need.
Absolutely.
So if the situation came up today, not back then, you can see that you could make a different choice.
The choice might end up being the same, I don't know, but I would have the ability to open more dialogue about it and find out more about what is going on for him with his feelings and needs. I know that I would find a way to question that part of him.
Yeah. And you still can.
Yeah, and that's what I'm hoping for with this little opening of the door that's happening now.
Yeah.
Yeah.
And one other thing is that when you hear a demand, it isn't necessarily intended as a demand.
Yes, I'm becoming very clear about that, that it's more to do with possibly fears or guilt coming from there, and that I have a possibility of inquiring more about what's really going on. And even to do that brings some satisfaction that I have not experienced before.
It's two things. One is the distinction between whether the person intends to make a demand and whether we perceive a demand that was not intended. We're very talented in hearing a demand even when it's not there. All of us, I know this, all of us do this. That's one piece. The other piece, the even more intensive inquiry into the dynamics of choice, is to say, even when somebody else intends something to be a demand, we still get to choose about whether we hear it as a demand or hear it as a request. My belief is the more I'm able to hear it as a request, the more possibilities I will have for how to respond to it. So, for example, the very possibility of thinking about entering a dialogue with your son requires that you hear feelings and needs behind what he says, and that immediately changes your experience, so you no longer hear a demand. You hear feelings and needs. You can only hear a demand when you don't hear feelings and needs. As soon as you're able to hear feelings and needs, then the door opens inside of you before it opened inside of the other person, necessarily. And it's the door opening inside of you that can create the transformation. Make sense?
Very much so. Now to step into fire, so to speak, and hold that intention within myself.
So just to equip you with even more solidity, do you want to share what is your best guess of your son's needs at the time?
At the time this happened originally, you mean?
Yeah.
Sure. I wrote down, I think he was scared. I think he was sad. I think he was resentful. I think he was hurt.
I want to pause you for a second, and I want to say this is something that I say many times. Much more transformation happens when we connect to another person's needs than when we connect to their feelings.
Okay. I think his needs were, I think he really wanted to feel supported or be supported and nurtured. I think he wanted harmony.
Mm-hmm.
I think he wanted caring, appreciation, and consideration for what was happening in his life.
I have one more that jumps at me, but I want to check with you if you think it resonates.
Okay.
And that is something about some sense of hope for continuity of family, even after a breakup.
Yes, and that's one that I've really been thinking about and wrestling with, because I've not only seen this in my children, I've seen it in other children, that they still want their mother and father to have some sort of relationship that offers some sort of harmony. And that one is a big mystery to me to this day of how to get.
Yeah, the fact that he wants it doesn't mean that you can give it to him. But just to recognize the depth of the longing for that can soften your heart and support the connection.
Okay, that's a really nice one for me to think about and think about in those terms. I've noticed that I get caught in feeling responsible for making these things happen.
Yeah, I'm so appreciating this, because that's one of the keys to the freedom, is that we can open our heart to what the other person wants and needs without necessarily giving it to them.
Ah, yeah, I'm right now just thinking that's a nice place for me to put more energy into making a part of my consciousness.
Thank you. It was a pleasure to work with you because of the sense that I have of your gentleness towards yourself, and at the same time as your commitment to learn and grow and stretch, and the determination to find truth. That's all of that I sense in you. Does that ring true for you?
Very much so. Yep, that's what's going on.
Okay.
Thank you.
I would like to open it up to see if anybody has any questions or comments about this exchange or the different points that came out of it. I had an insight that was really powerful for me, that you cannot make a demand without having the power to create consequences.
Mm-hmm.
At the same time, you said we're very talented in hearing a demand is an attendant of the request. What I realized is that it happens a lot in my life, that my requests are heard as demands and vice versa mm-hmm. by my partner. And I just realized that it's because in those situations, we both perceive the other person as having power that mm-hmm. in reality they may or may not have, and they certainly aren't intending on exerting.
Right. Yeah, so there's a little bit kind of like of an expansion of like a freedom inside of you as you see this?
Oh, yeah. I realize it's all just about the fiction and the struggle over who has more power, when in reality
yeah.
either one has power over the other and doesn't really want to have power over the other.
Yeah. Thank you. I appreciate this. Any other comments or questions about this exchange?
You said making choice is not about no consequences, but it's about...
I don't know the words exactly that I said, but I know what I'm intending to say right now. It's how we relate to the consequences. So the two extremes of submission and rebellion. In submission, the way I relate to the consequences is through fear. I am so afraid of the consequences that I'm going to do what you ask me to do, even if it doesn't work for me. And it's the daily reality of children. Vast majority of children all the time do things because they're afraid of the consequences. That's how we learn to hear demands. Does that kind of like reverberate?
Yeah, absolutely. And when I'm hearing that, especially speaking about it in the children, that we all kind of carry that with us and how deeply ingrained it is. I'm feeling a little bit more compassion for myself of how hard it is for me to let go and how strong I have my need for autonomy is in rebelling and things because I've lived it for so long. It also reminds me of a time where I realized that my need for autonomy was so strong because of all the years of not feeling like I had choice, that I forgot I had other needs that I wasn't meeting in choosing to rebel.
Thank you. I'm really, really appreciating that you say it, because when the need for autonomy goes unmet, it grows and grows, and it ends up overshadowing other needs. And then we make choices based on the autonomy. But the paradox is that when we do that, we're not actually exercising choice, so we don't actually meet our need for autonomy. It was funny if it wasn't so sad.
Exactly. I'm laughing, but I'm also like, oh, yeah.
Yeah. So there's a way in which when we rebel, part of what we do is we defy the consequences, but we don't really face them.
Yeah. And it feels like I'm wanting to regain my power through rebellion, but I don't get it.
Yeah.
Is this related to this power over power with peace?
Yes, absolutely. I want to make one distinction and then I will draw the connection. The distinction that I want to make is between a need for autonomy and a need for respect for my autonomy. And we tend to confuse the two. Because in actual fact, if you really... really very precise in the looking at things, nobody can take away autonomy from us. Because even when we are small children, we choose. People can take away options, and people can impose consequences, but they can't take away choice. So, for example, I once had an interaction with a child that I had just met. I came to her house to meet with her grandmother, who was a friend of mine. And somehow, it was just the two of us in the house for a little while, and we were talking and having a really lovely conversation. And then she said, okay, I have to go now because I have to clean up my room. And I said to her, what is true? No, you don't. You don't have to. And she looks at me like, yes, I do have to. My mother said that I had to clean up my room. And I said to her, that still doesn't mean that you have to. And she was very intrigued.
Wow.
I'm sure.
I said, if you don't clean up your room, she may punish you. But that doesn't mean you have to. So she looked at me, and it was like lightning went through her, and she took a breath, and she said, I get it. I think I want to clean up my room. You see the difference?
Very much so.
But the choice is still hers. The terms of the choice are not hers. If somebody points a gun to you and says, do this or I'll kill you, you still have a choice. It's limited in terms of options, but it's infinite in terms of choice. This is part of why Gandhi says that nonviolence, full nonviolence, requires overcoming fear.
Yeah, and the idea that we have to like our options. Like, I don't like the option. A gun to my head.
Yeah, yeah. So, now to tie it back to power over power with. When I use power over, what that means in the context of what we're talking about is I exercise my power, meaning my access to resources, to limit your access to resources and or to create consequences if you make choices that I don't like. That's what I do when I exercise power over. And I make my own choices regardless of whether or not they work for you. You still have choice, but I do everything in my power to make you forget that you have choice. And to make it really difficult for you to exercise your choice. Is this clear?
Yeah.
I'm happy to also say it again. When I have more access to resources than you do, I can limit your access to resources. I can create consequences for you in terms of saying no to me. And I can make choices on my own without involving you, whether or not they work for you. These are the three ways that I'm in this moment aware of that I can exercise my power over you. That makes it difficult for you to make choice, but I can never take choice away from you. I can just make you forget that you have it.
So that I'm living in our power over structures at schools and whatever else, that we can still engage in the power with way.
From below. Power with from below is one of the hardest things that human beings can do. And that is the essence of what Gandhi did. It is to say, I am not going to accept your terms. I'm going to see your humanity and seek to honor your humanity. But I'm not going to let go of my humanity, my choice, my dignity, even if it means I die. And in point of fact, he managed to equalize the relationship. They left. He didn't go to war with them. Their act of leaving was an act of acknowledging the equality of the Indians. Does that resonate for you?
Yeah, very much. I really see that Gandhi taps into a place of real power, where his power really is, and it's not deniable, although his message would not have been heard if he'd been killed. So I struggle a little.
Right. That's a piece of trouble that I have, which to me is a strategic question. It's not a spiritual question. It's a strategic question for me of how do I make myself both powerful and dispensable? Meaning, if I'm dispensable, if the movement doesn't depend on me, then it makes it less appealing to kill me.
Yeah.
Which is why I'm so eager to create movements that are very, very, very collaborative and power with, so that there isn't one person at the top that decides everything. And if that person is removed, the whole thing collapses, which is what happened with Gandhi, with Martin Luther King. It looks to me like they exercise power with in relation to the power structures, but they didn't think it through in relation to their own movement. That's part of what I'm so excited about in terms of NDC, is that we're trying to do just that. And to take it to a smaller, you know, more kind of like mundane thing, people can change their relationship with their bosses. The boss has the power to fire you. That's the ultimate consequence that a boss can do. And you can choose to engage in human-to-human dialogue with your boss to transform a situation. And it requires a lot of skill. A lot of skill and a lot of spiritual transformation so that you won't fall into seeing your boss as powerful, horrible, whatever, so you don't make them into a thing. You keep seeing them as human. You keep having empathy for them and for you.
I've done a few workshops with people where they're employees, and it's really difficult to explain to people in the boss-employee relationship that they have power.
Yes, because what is required for them to exercise that power is indeed a lot of skill. So it's kind of like bringing up another item that I really wanted to touch base on. This idea that we always have full choice is very powerful as a theoretical and spiritual concept for me. But I want to temper it with several ways in which our choice is constrained. Our choice is constrained sometimes from the outside. To give an example, it's not exactly from the outside, but by circumstances. If I choose to have children, when I sit with friends, the choice to, if I just hang out with friends, the choice to say, oh, I'm going to stay a little longer and not get home in time to be there when my child comes back from school, that's a very different choice from if there isn't a child in my life. So there's choices that we can make in life that can constrain the choices that we have available to us afterwards. It's true that technically you can say, well, it's just going to be consequences, but there's some way in which that doesn't honor the human condition that I wanted to name. Sometimes certain sets of choices constrain other sets of choices. Does that ring true for you?
Yeah, and I've felt that with my kids. I struggled with that in wanting freedom and choice. It kind of came to the conclusion that there's kind of a hierarchy of needs, that my needs for nurturing and their well-being supersede other of my needs sometimes. I don't know if that's a good place to be, that's where I've ended up with it.
I'd like to reframe it a little bit. To me, it sounds more like you are choosing and re-choosing and re-choosing to affirm your choice to have the children and embrace lovingly the consequences of that.
That's great. Choosing and re-choosing to have my children every day.
Yeah. Yeah. And it is a choice that you have at that level. And we know that it's a choice because people sometimes choose differently.
Yeah.
To say, I can't do this children thing and I'm going to leave my children. It's not common, but people do it. So that's one end from which choices are constrained. And another end from which choices are constrained is experiences that we've had. For example, trauma, which unfortunately most of us have had. This is studied. It's not like I'm just saying this, but there is, the information is out there about the extent of trauma that people experience. And trauma means that literally choice is not available to us. And I'm sure you've all experienced this when you're triggered. What does trigger mean? You lose in a certain real way, your capacity to make choice in that moment. You're flooded. Your nervous system is in a particular place that experiences reality in a particular way, and within that, you can't choose. I'm curious if there's anybody that doesn't recognize that state. So then to say to someone, well, you can just choose not to respond, doesn't speak to the reality of how complex it is inside of us about access to choice. Even we can be in a moment when we know that we have theoretical choice, but we're not able to access it, because of what lived inside. So with that, I wanted to just conclude that piece. I'm really appreciating the quality of dialogue with you. I'm very grateful for this piece of the conversation. Anything more that you want to add to this whole journey?
Right now. Thank you, Mikey.
Thank you.